Bottom line is, what is theology? It's the study of God. And who should be studying God? Well, Christians. All right. So it is true that if you delve into the study of God without starting with the basis of the Bible and knowledge of Jesus and the resurrection of Christ, it is true, all right, that you could end up in some sort of a rabbit hole. So the study of theology, it could be dangerous if not done in the context of the Bible and in a community of faith. But that's what we got here. The Alpha Omega Club, a community of faith and lots of Bible stuff. So don't worry. Oh, that's a nude picture. We better get rid of that thing. This might get arrested. Can you show nude pictures on campus?
Yeah, sure.
All right. It is, after all, from the Sistine Chapel. So the Pope goes and looks at that picture. So if the Pope looks at that picture, I guess we can too. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So here's the outline of our class. Obviously, we're only going to hit the first part of this outline. We're going to talk about the Christian and other worldviews. Now, I did a class on the Christian and other worldviews very recently. So I'm going to do a very, very pared down version of that. But I don't assume everybody here was in that class. And it sort of lays the foundation because we're going to talk about God, the God of the Bible. So we want to establish that there's other concepts of God. So we'll do that. Then we'll talk about the concept of Trinity. We'll ask, is that even a biblical idea? If so, what does it mean? And how do you defend it? Okay, we'll talk about the apologetics of the Trinity. And then we'll talk about Christology. Okay, who is Christ? Then we'll talk about soteriology. In fact, we're gonna take a largely historical approach to Christian theology. We're gonna look at how Christians over the centuries have asked and answered questions about theology. And the fact is, the Christian church, the first question they spent a lot of time on was the idea of who is God? Trinity. The second big question they spent a lot of time on was the nature of who Christ is. And you'd think they would have really been all over the salvation issue, but questions of what it means to be saved and how we're saved were largely ignored for the first 300 or 400 years of Christianity, interestingly enough. By the way, I'm going to use fancy words in this class. All right? I try to avoid fancy words, but in this class, I'm going to actually use the fancy words, okay? But what I'm going to do is I'm going to define them. I'm going to come back to them, and what I'll probably do is I'll probably define them two or three different times to make absolutely sure we know what we're talking about. So the big fancy word for the study of how we are saved is called soteriology. I'm sure it's from the Latin for the word salvation, soter, something like that. So we'll talk about soteriology and the history of how different Christian groups have conceived of how that works from a theological perspective. And then, well, of course, we'll ask the biblical question as well. Okay, got it? And then we'll talk about theodicy, the question of is God good? And we'll talk about things like predestination. And we'll talk about the Calvinistic perspective versus the Arminian perspective. And we'll talk about the Jesuits and different ideas about basically the question of whether God is good. We're going to defend the idea that God is good, but we're going to allow for the possibility that he's not in order to discuss theology, okay? And underneath that, we'll talk about the problem of evil, suffering, and the question of about hell. Okay, and then, now, normally, by the way, item number, what is it, number 7 in the list, normally that's the first thing you do when you study theology. So we're going to do a very non-traditional class on Christian theology. All right, got it? Normally, the first thing you do when you talk about God is you talk about omniscience, omnipotence, omnipresence, and all that stuff. All right? But that's not what we're going to do. Now, if you want to change my outline, go ahead and, you know, maybe you could try to get me to change my mind. So we're going to talk about those qualities of God, those classic qualities of God. And then we're going to talk about, oh, that big fancy word, eschatology, the nature of heaven. Got it? So what are some of the questions? What are some of the questions that we're going to be asking? All right, so we're going to ask, what is God. Right? We grow up in a culture that assumes things about God. People say, if that's the way God is, then I'm not going to worship that God. Well, that's a great plan. You know, that's a great plan. You know, and in fact, we grew up in a Western culture that assumes God is good. Right?
Yeah.
That's not a universal idea. Okay? The idea that God even is good. So we'll talk about that. And then we'll talk about cosmology. So see those big words? Theology, cosmology, soteriology, Christology, and eschatology. All right? Those are the big words. We're going to talk about the nature of God. We're going to talk about the nature of creation, the physical universe. We're going to talk about the relationship between God and human beings, which is soteriology. We're going to talk about how Jesus fits into the whole picture. That's part of Trinity. And then we'll talk about, okay, then what's the ultimate thing here? That's eschatology. End times. Okay? These are some sources. Write them down right away. Okay? My suggestion would be N.T. Wright. Okay? I've not actually read the Alistair McGrath's theology. It's so well recommended. I'm putting it up there. All right? True for you, but not true for me. That's a very, very basic book on theology by Paul Kalpana. I've read that one. James Sire is not a book on theology. It's a book on worldview. Actually, there's a better book on worldview. The one I wrote. All right. I don't know if it's better. But, it's called True, Right, Better, A Defense of the Christian Worldview. All right. Anything by N.T. Wright is great. I mean, seriously, everything he writes is great. And I don't know, he's obviously can't possibly be married or had children because it's ridiculous. Surprised by Hope is his book on basically eschatology. Okay? And of course, you can't go wrong with Mere Christianity.
Oh, yeah.
It is a book about theology. So there are some recommendations. All of those books are very accessible. Every single one of them is very accessible to the college, you know, freshman and college level. No problem. Okay, got it? Good. All right, so like I said, a couple of you came in slightly late. I'm not saying that to call you out, just to point out why I'm going backward in my outline. Here's our outline. All right, we're going to talk about the Christian worldview tonight. And again, I taught a class on this quite recently. It was one of our Friday night things, so I'm going to do a very, very quick go through the concept of the Christian and other worldviews. Okay? Got it? Good. Any questions so far? So one way to understand Christian theology is to describe other theological ideas other than the Christian one. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to set the stage for the nature of God. That's what theology is by considering other worldviews. All right, up until, I would say, in America, up until about the 60s or 70s, in America, if you're at a university campus, easily 80% of the people there believed in the Christian God. All right, maybe well over that. And other worldviews were basically hard to even find. So the concept of Christian theism was the working model for almost everything that happened. But as you all know, we're living in the post-Christian age. So in a post-Christian age, we need to be aware of other worldviews. So today, when you're up on campus, you share with people, you get people to tell you that they're Buddhists or they're... the most common thing is what's called a nun. You know what a nun is? It's not a woman wearing a habit, all right? It's the none of the above. The people who are spiritual but don't hold to any particularly well-defined worldview. Most of those nuns, none of the above, really are following New Age thinking, typically. So they're postmodern, New Age sort of spirituality. And so a good question is, when we're thinking about Christian worldviews, where do they fall into? You know, which view of God do they even fall into? All right. What's interesting is, in all this mishmash of ideas, you know, certainly in New Age and postmodernism and even in atheism and determinism and materialism, almost all the ideas of what makes what's right and what's good, it's really hijacked from Christianity. You know? The idea that human beings have an individual value. The idea that we deserve to have that the concept of human rights. The concept of that slavery is wrong. And that all people were created equal, although those framers didn't do a great job of actually doing that, you know. The idea that God is almost everything that our culture says this is good and valuable is hijacked out of the Christian worldview and sort of adopted as if it just dropped out of the sky. And that's worth noting. Even if you ask an atheist or an agnostic, you know, what ought to be? How ought things to happen? And almost everything on their list, they're going to assume that's obvious. What they don't realize is those assumptions come directly from Christianity. So that's worth noting. So let's talk about worldview. Again, for those who came in a bit late, we're going to do a very, very, very brief introduction to worldview before we go into our other topics in theology. So one's worldview is the perspective one uses to process and interpret information about the world. Now, some of us think, I just observe and then the observation tells me what I believe. That's a load of garbage. Nobody does that. It's not true. All of us have a filter. All of us, information comes in, that's true. But then what we do with that information is determined by what we assume about the world. And even if you don't know you have a worldview, even if you can't explain your worldview, I guarantee you, you have a worldview. So different people have information. In my book, I use the example. All right, we have the information. Let's go to John 11. All right, the information is this guy was dead for 4 days. This other guy comes into town, says, open the roll back the stone. Lazarus comes out, and there's two completely different responses to that, right? One response is, you know, another response is, kill him. I mean, worldview. Okay. James Sire, my second favorite author, other than myself, on worldview, you know, I wrote the best book, but, you know, I should bring a copy next week. You can pick up a copy if you want. It's called True Right Better. But anyway, James Sire just defined worldview this way. A worldview is a set of presuppositions or assumptions. Presupposition, fancy word. Assumption. A presupposition is the thing you assume to be true before the information comes in. So when information comes in that disagrees with that presupposition, you tend to scramble it up and just turn it around to, you see what I'm saying? All right? Which we hold about the basic make of the world. So a plane crashes. What's that mean? Your worldview has a huge effect on what that means. Some people might say, inshallah. Other people might say, the motor broke. You know, different ideas there. Okay, got it? All right. Oh, yeah. So, in my book, True Right Better, I defend the Christian worldview based on this sort of evaluation, what I believe would make a worldview a good one. And it's pretty hard to argue with these three points that this would perhaps be a way to start to think about what would make a good worldview. Number one, it has to be true. All right, and what do I mean by true? In other words, that worldview, the things that it says need to be true, appear to actually be true. All right, for example, we'll talk about Hinduism tonight, which is basically a pantheistic idea, the idea that God and the universe are the same. And if God and the universe are the same, then God did not create the universe, which means the universe was not created, which means the universe is eternal. Okay? So if we subject that to this analysis, is it true that the universe is eternal? The answer is, it is not true. So I would say this, a worldview which requires certain things to be true, which empirically appear not to be true, that would make it not a very good worldview. Got it? So that was my first sort of go at what would make a worldview a good one. Second one is that it satisfactorily answers the questions that people really want answered. All right? People don't care about the price of tea in China. People don't care, really, in the end, they don't really care how all the species got here. I mean, does anybody really, really, actually, in their heart of heart, care what the origin of species was? I mean, all right? People care about questions like, why am I here? Yeah. How did I get here? What is the meaning of life, if any? In fact, what's the meaning of history? Does history have meaning to it? That's a basic question. That's huge. What's the Christian answer to that? Yes, definitely. Okay? And the most basic question, what am I?
Yeah.
What am I? Okay? And so a good worldview provides answers to that which are both consistent with reality, number one, and number two, which leave us feeling like, okay, yeah, that makes sense, that works. What happens when we die? These are the kind of questions that a worldview needs to answer in a way that is consistent and satisfactory. Okay, and then number three, or I guess letter C in this case, holding to this worldview would make one a good person by comparison to other worldviews. Okay? Defining good, like I've mentioned in this class I taught quite recent, a few of you remember this. I said if you put an atheist, a Buddhist, a Hindu, a Muslim, a New Ager, whatever, all these people in the room, let's not get the committee too big. All right, but get all these people in the room and say, all right, you're not going to come out of this room until you come up with a list somewhere between 6 and 10 points that defines what makes a person a good person. That operation would not be difficult. They'd be loyal. They'd be courageous. They would be generous, etc. Okay, got it? Yes? And so we could hold a worldview up to those questions. Can you logically conclude that pantheism or polytheism or Christian theism or all these different worldviews, can we logically extrapolate that those who actually hold to those worldviews would have those characteristics? Okay? And I believe on all three grounds, Christianity is by far the superior worldview. Now the next screen is, I'm going to list what I believe is a fairly succinct description of the Christian worldview. So let's just imagine this before I go to, let me make sure, These are different worldviews. There's different ways of categorizing them. Animism, all right, yeah. Animism, it's a religious system which includes the idea that the world is, there's spirits everywhere. There's spirits of the trees, spirits of the waterfalls, spirits of the clouds, and just this idea of a magical universe with everything spirits. Animism is not a common worldview today, although there are animistic religions, especially in Africa and parts of South Asia and certain areas in South America. All right. The anthropologist of religion would tell you that the evolution of religion is from animism to polytheism to whatever. They'll tell you that. I don't know. Maybe. There's polytheism, which was the dominant worldview in the time of the writing of both the Old Testament and the New Testament, the dominant worldview, the idea that there are many different supernatural beings which oversee and control and determine what happens in the world. And then there's pantheism, which possibly, if you were to do a statistical analysis in sheer numbers, might be the single most common worldview, although it's probably pretty close to theism. Okay, pantheism, the idea that the universe is one. There's only one reality. That God is the universe, and the universe is God, and therefore you are God, and God is you. Okay? Pan, which does not mean something you cook eggs in. Pan means all, right? So a belief that spirit fills the universe, God is the universe, and we are therefore part of God. And there's this distinction, panentheism, which would be Stoicism, which is God is in everything. That's not important. Okay, then there's dualism. Okay, anyway, pantheism is the dominant worldview in South and East Asia. Okay? It's not the only one, but it's the dominant one. And just because there's flat out a lot of people living there, you know, between China and India. So it's a very, very common worldview. All right, and then there's dualism, the idea that there's sort of there's a good and a bad force, kind of in competition. That would be, maybe you could argue Star Wars is kind of like that, right? Sort of. Star Wars is sort of kind of semi-pantheism, semi-dualism. Those two can kind of live together. In China, you have the yin and the yang and all that kind of stuff. But there were dualistic religions in place in the time of Christ. Manichaeism was one. Zoroastrianism was another. Okay, so the universe is governed by two sort of competing forces of, in quotes, good and evil. Okay, and then there's deism. This is a version of monotheism, but it's monodeism, I guess. So deism is the idea of a distant, uninvolved God. So basically, deism is a worldview that says God created the universe. And God said, good luck. Okay? And that goes back to, Epicureanism in the Greek world. Arguably, Isaac Newton was a deist. And many of the founders of the United States government and the writers of the Constitution, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, they were deists. They weren't Christians, they were deists. Okay? And then there's monotheism. Alright, but monotheism can be broken down into sort of the Islamic version of monotheism, the Christian version. So these are the basic worldviews. Alright, those are definitions. Of course, there's a few other ideas. Of course, there's postmodernism and there's determinism and these other things. Some worldview experts like to simplify things, which is a good idea. And one of my favorite authors in this area, Robert Kirka, a very good friend of mine who died a few years ago, he likes this description. So many would say you could divide worldviews really into three basic categories. These are, you know, ignoring the stuff that almost nobody believes in anymore, okay? Theism, pantheism, and naturalism. There you go. Okay? Single creator. All right? Pantheism, which is there's just one ultimate reality. There's no good. There's no evil. There's no beginning. There's no end. Pantheism. And then naturalism, which is the only things that are real are things that are natural. There is no supernatural. It completely denies the existence of the supernatural. And then there's subcategories. Okay? Got it? So, oh yeah, that's right. So, if you were to have a person who knows nothing about Christianity, and they may have been raised in a particular perspective, but the bottom line is they're just searching. They don't know. And I meet a lot of these people on campus, a lot of people like this. They don't know. So if you had to say, here's what Christianity says about reality, okay, and you're not allowed to use any scripture, you just have to say, according to Christianity, this is the nature of reality, okay? So I believe you could define that using Genesis chapter 1 alone. Okay? And really, to fully flesh out the Christian worldview, you might have to go all the way through Genesis chapter 3. So here we go. So according to the Christian view of the universe, the physical universe is real. It's no illusion. All right, and Buddhism and Hinduism propose the physical universe is not real. All right, as did Manichaeism and others. It is real. It was created from nothing. There was nothing, and then there was everything. And that it is good. Yes? That's the basic idea. The question we can ask is whether that's true. The question we can ask is, what does that say about those questions? And we can ask, harder, I think, to ask, what's that say, whether that makes us a good person? I'm not sure. Okay? Yeah, right, but that, well, what is that nothing? Nothing, literally, nothing. There was, as far as a, what's the universe made out of? Time, space, energy, no time, no space, no energy, nothing. Okay? Yeah. Okay, number two, there exists an unseen reality. There is, in addition to the physical things, there's a spiritual reality. Which is not defined by physical reality. There's a separate reality, if you will. Human beings are both spiritual and physical. Okay, made us in His image. Okay, got it. In the beginning, the Spirit was hovering over the water. All these things. Number three, the Creator, both obviously is the God of the Bible. All right, and then we can list some certain characteristics that we'll talk about in this class: love, justice, holiness, omniscience, all those things. Number five is, although all God's creation, including the physical world, is good, right? How good? Genesis 1:36. Very good. All of it. All of it. All right. Evil exists. Okay. There is evil. There is degradation. There is. But these things are the result of free will given by God to human creation and rebellion and therefore sin. So one of the fundamental questions of worldview is, number one, is evil real? And number two, why is it? Dualists will explain that very differently than the Christian worldview. But the Christian worldview has a problem, right? Because we say God is good, and everything God created is good, and yet, you know, they say it's all good, but it ain't all good. It's, in fact, there's a lot of bad. So a worldview has to provide an explanation for that. One of the ways to explain it is to say it's not real. Okay? Another way to explain it is to say, no, there's no evil. Anyway. All right, point number six, I would say, is one of those, if we go back to number four, one of those qualities of God is holiness. It's also justice. And therefore, point number six, God's justice demands judgment and separation from God for eternity. Whether the suffering is eternal is an open question. Christians have different ideas about that. And then, of course, number seven, the solution to part six is the atoning death of Christ. Okay, good. The point I would make there is, if Genesis 1:1 is true, let's read Genesis 1:1. I believe Genesis 1, the primary function of the first chapter of Genesis, is as a polemic in favor of biblical theism against the animism and polytheism present in the world when Genesis was written. It's not primarily a scientific treatise. It is a statement about God and the nature of God. So in the beginning, all right, which worldview is destroyed already? Pantheism. In the beginning, God. Which worldview just got wiped out? Naturalism. And? And animism and dualism. Created. The heavens and the earth. And we go on. All right. And now, at that point, we don't yet have points number, going back to the Christian view, we don't have points number 5, 6, and 7 yet. Right? We already have the first four points. It's right there. Genesis 1:1. Okay? But Genesis 5, 6, and 7, you gotta make it to Genesis chapter 3. And you see rebellion. You see free will. You see the results of free will. And you even get the whole thing with the heel, and he'll strike his heel. You even get a hint about the solution to that. All right? So that's the Christian worldview. All right? In a nutshell, if you will. Okay? Now let's extremely briefly. We're going to do the 5-minute version of some other worldviews. And I'm going to just even hint, because again, I did a class on this pretty recently. All right, so here we go. If Genesis 1:1 is true, then animism, polytheism, pantheism, dualism, naturalism, postmodernism, and every other ism is false. Although, really, you have to get to Genesis 3 to eliminate deism. All right, deism is still hanging on by its fingernails until you get to Genesis 3 and you find out, no, God is totally intimately involved. Really, Genesis 2. I want to make the point that conflicting worldviews cannot be accommodated with one another. So if biblical theism is correct, then every other worldview is wrong. All right? Anyway, yeah, Genesis 1:1, but Hebrews 11:3, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was created, not made out of what is visible, it was made out of something which is invisible. Creation out of nothing. Hindu worldview. Some of us may be well acquainted with that worldview. Others may not. Some people say, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, Confucianism, Taoism, Christianity, Islam. They're all, they're different flavors of more or less the same thing. Really all go into the same place. Garbage. Nonsense. Now, we're at a university, so we're supposed to be here to learn, to be open-minded, and to learn about these worldviews. But at some point, you know what? The idea that they're all the same, different paths to the same place, that's nonsense. That doesn't make any sense at all. So I'll tell you right now, if this is true, then Christianity is craziness. Right? So some of the concepts which are essential to the Hindu worldview, the idea of Maya, the idea that the physical world is an illusion. Okay? There is an unseen reality that underlies that physical world. And there's a lot similar to Greek philosophies, by the way, of Plato and others. All right? In this view, in this Hindu worldview, physical things are essentially bad. You don't want to be attached to the physical. Because in the Hindu cosmology, there's these different levels. Just go to Angkor Wat in Cambodia, which is a physical representation of the Hindu worldview. You got all these different levels. Borobudur in Indonesia, same thing, all these different levels. And, in fact, if you go to, it's worth going there. You gotta go to Angkor Wat. It's near Siem Reap in Cambodia. It's amazing. So they got the upper level, the middle level, and the lower level. And this spiritual, physical, even more spiritual. Heaven, hell, all that kind of stuff. So attachment to physical things is to remove yourself from the spiritual reality. So therefore, physical things are bad. And according to Christian worldview, physical things are good. Now those can't both be true. And one of them is definitely wrong, and you can decide for that. All right, the idea of pantheism. There is no personal God. Now, Hindus will use God language. They'll talk about God. But if they talk about God as a person, they're making a mistake. That's not their religion. All right, so God is this presence, this universal soul, this universal thing. All right? The universe is eternal and cyclic. Every single, there's a lot of, you know, there's the whole thing with the turtle and the bowl of milk and all that kind of stuff. That is in the Puranas. That's, I don't, there's many different views of cosmology and Hinduism, but all of them have this wheel, this cosmic wheel. You've heard about that, right? They even had the thing they spin around, that kind of stuff. Because creation goes through cycles of creation, sustaining, destruction. Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma, all this kind of stuff. Okay, got it? So according to the Hindu worldview, the universe is eternal. It is, has a cyclic creation, destruction kind of nature. Okay. The goal of Hinduism is to achieve nirvana. All of us have heard that. What is nirvana? Nirvana is a state of non-existence. Nirvana is a state of absorption. It's a state of, you know, losing yourself to become one with the universe. Okay? Essentially to cease to exist as an individual, separate person. So you can see how this affects things like the idea of concept of human rights, the concept of human dignity. The idea that different people have different, you know, levels when they're born. The whole caste system reinforces this idea. All right, the Hindu worldview has us looking at our bellies, not out there. Okay? Yeah.
Is it appropriate for Christians to be kind of curious about the doctrines of other religions? Can we still read it?
Absolutely, we should. Yeah. But my suggestion is to lay a solid foundation. Because as I look at Hinduism, it reveals to me the awesomeness of Christianity. Okay? As I read, you know, Nietzsche and, you know, these other writers, which you do that stuff here. It's okay. But you want to find your grounding. So you don't want to spend 17 years learning about existentialism or, you know. Yeah, see, learning about the Hindu worldview makes me understand the awesomeness of what we have. And the fact that human beings would never have created this idea. This idea of a God who became man so that we become like him. The idea of substitutional atonement. These things that no person would have ever made up. I'm going to show you a slide. I'm going a little long here. I'm going to show you a slide that kind of explains that. So, yes, but I want to strongly suggest, especially for younger Christians, to, at least in the beginning, get a very, very deep grounding in biblical ideas, scripture, fellowship. But then at some point, you need to branch out and understand what other people are thinking. All right, if I have time, we'll make it to Acts 17. We'll see Paul doing exactly that. He knew the Epicurean better than an Epicurean knew themselves. He knew the Stoic better than the Stoic knew his or herself. Or perhaps nearly as equally well. Okay? Great question. All right, and by the way, this is not a good worldview for many reasons, but I'm going to move on. Now, Buddhists are supposed to be atheists because technically Buddha did not address the question of God. But everything he said tells me, without any question at all, he believed in reincarnation and karma, all these things, Maya. He was a different kind of pantheist. Okay? So the Four Noble Truths, suffering is not getting what wants. Cause of suffering is desire, which leads to rebirth. There's that reincarnation. The way to end suffering is to end desire. The way to end desire, end of suffering, is the Eightfold Path. Buddhism encourages dispassion and disinvolvement. Not compassion and involvement, which explains why most of the benevolent work done in Buddhist countries is done by Christians. Okay, the Eightfold Path, right viewpoint, right values, right speech, right action, like livelihood. As a philosophy of life, Buddhism has a lot to be said for it, honestly. But as a worldview, it kind of, it crashes. Okay? So the cosmology in Buddhism is virtually identical. If you look at, they'll have these little pictures of, they're just these different levels and all that sort of stuff. The wheel. You've heard about the sort of the cosmic wheel that probably came to you through Buddhism more likely even than it came to you through Hinduism. Okay, got it? So it's pantheism. Then there's New Age. New Age is basically pantheism dressed up in Western clothing. Okay? And of course, there's some things that pantheism proposes that New Age won't accept. All right? Because pantheism says human individuals have no essential value or purpose. All right? And so basically New Agers take they take sort of a Hindu Buddhist perspective and just spin it in a way that works in a Western world. Yes. Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Nihilism is a form of atheism. So basically, atheism says the only thing that is real is physical things. Okay. Really, atheism is not a worldview. Atheism is a perspective. It's basically, you could say determinism or scientific materialism. But if you take that view, there's three ways of dealing with that. Because if that's true, then there is no purpose and meaning to life. By definition. So there are three classic ways of dealing with that. One is existentialism, to say, well, technically there's no meaning, but you make your own meaning. And the meaning is what you make of it, and go for it. You know what I'm saying? That's sort of like happy atheism. Another way of dealing with atheism is to say the only meaning is the meaning of the whole. In other words, the group has meaning, the individual has none. That's communism or Marxism. And then the third form of atheism is, all right, it's all just a bunch of nothing, you know, let's just commit suicide, you know, nihilism. Nihilism is such a negative philosophy that even Nietzsche couldn't handle it. Well, of course, he did kind of go crazy. All right. There was a nihilist movement in Russia in the late 19th century. What's his name? The comedian, you know, the nihilist comedian. What's his name? The nihilist comedian. The most famous comedian in the 90s, his show, it was about nothing, right? There's the comedy show about nothing. Another example of that is what's that one my brain's just not working. The most famous comedy show in the 90s. I mean, the by far the most famous comedy show in the 90s. That's the 80s. Mork and Mindy, huh? Yeah.
Oh, Seinfeld.
Seinfeld. Seinfeld. He's a nihilist. Okay. Not Jerry Springer. Oh, that's Jerry Springer. All right. Anyway, if you want to understand New Age, just throw a Western spin on Hinduism. That's New Age. Okay. Islamic worldview. The Islamic worldview is the closest to the Christian worldview. Absolutely, by far, because it is a theistic worldview. All right, in fact, if I were to go back, where's that outline? Where's that outline? All right. There you go. Number one, check. Number two, check. I'm talking about Islamic theism. Number three, check. Number four, God is love?
No.
God is mercy, not love.
Justice.
And then it starts to fall apart here, okay? Got it? All right. So let's get back to Islamic theism. This is where I'm going to attempt to answer your question. Alex. Okay, so here we go. God is a very, so, Islamic theism is fairly close to deism in some ways. In that, this Greek idea of God being very distant from us, and we can barely approach him. The idea of, you know, be still and know that I am God, and the idea of approaching God's throne, and his grace, and all that kind of stuff. So, the Islamic worldview is this God who's very distant from humans. And it's a deterministic theism. Inshallah, God determines. The choice is God's. It's not our choice. Fate. There's all kinds of surahs about fate. And inshallah, God willing, it's God's will. So why did, you know, 500 people get killed in a stampede in, at Mecca? It was God's will. Okay, great. So why did, the tsunami kill 250,000 people, most of them Muslims? They're off of Sumatra. Is God's will. That kind of stuff. Okay, got it? And Islamic theology doesn't have this concept of grace. All right? So it's more like karma. It's surely good deeds take away evil deeds. Salvation by your own effort. Charity atones for sin. So in Islamic theology, you earn grace, you earn favor, you earn salvation, you earn paradise. All right? And also the whole, you know, karma, right? So, I do this sin, and then I go on I give some alms, and I do this sin, and I go to Mecca, all right, and I do this thing, and then I kill somebody in jihad. Woo! Yeah! That kind of stuff, okay? So good deeds canceling out bad deeds, all right? In Islam, salvation is earned through the efforts of those who are pre-selected by Allah to inhabit a very central paradise. Christianity, they're both theisms though. The idea of a creator. The idea of, you know, and all that sort of stuff. Salvation is granted by the grace of a loving God to those who, through faith and repentance, oh, and I throw in baptism, I gotta throw in there and accept that love. Okay? So who reaches out to whom? Okay? The human approach says we come towards God. Out of that, or there's no God at all. So every human created religion is the, on the left. Alright? And then Christianity says the opposite, which is what Michelangelo was trying to express here. Okay? Work salvation, there you go. Islam, Hinduism, Jaina, Sikhism, Gnosticism, New Age, Buddhism, maybe. And then salvation by grace on the right. Okay? I believe the biblical worldview answers all the hard questions satisfactorily. It tells us that suffering is not evil. It suggests compassion rather than dispassion. Christian groups are responsible for nearly all the world's efforts to deal with poverty, although a certain government just said we're going to mess over the whole world and not do anything for them anymore. But that's politics, okay? Hopefully Christians strongly disagree with what just happened. Strongly disagree. Hope so. Anyway. Alright. There we go. Yeah, so Acts 17. I gotta end in the next 2 minutes. So in Acts 17, 16 through 34, you see Paul dealing with other worldviews. He's interacting with Stoics and Epicureans principally. And what he does is he finds common ground with them. He says, wow, I see it's really religious. There's all these idols. The Stoics and Epicureans are like, yeah, that's, man, all those idols, that's ridiculous. Oh my goodness. He says, but the God that you think about, you even have an unknown God. Let me tell you about a better God. A God who's not distant and separate from us. No, a God in whom we live and move and have our being. So he's essentially quoting from the Stoic philosopher Aretas. He also quotes from an Epicurean philosopher, and he argues for a different worldview, a worldview about a God who wants to know us, who wants us to know him, a God who is reaching out to us rather than us having to reach out to him. Okay? So, how should we interact with people with other worldviews? Alex, you're asking about that. I think Paul would suggest that we find common ground. We have common ground even with atheists and every other worldview. Respect, give respect where respect is due. Note the good in what they're trying to do. All right? Don't make personal attacks and do not attack their religious leaders personally. Very bad idea. Highlight distinctions rather than saying how bad what they're doing is. Highlight distinctions. That's what Paul did. All right, so discussion questions. Like I said, we haven't really actually launched into our study of Christian theology. We're talking about other theologies. Okay? Back to our outline. For those of you who came in a bit late. Okay. There's our first point. Next week we're going to talk about Trinity. What the heck's that? Then we'll talk about Christology, soteriology, theodicy, problem of evil, qualities of God. Got it? But let's get to our questions for discussion tonight. Here we go. Have you ever considered a radically different theology or worldview other than Christian theism? I don't know. We'll just generate some discussion. Somebody go, not stupid. Don't say that, please. And then let's do, how would you explain God to a non-theist in at most one or two sentences? My suggestion is stop your discussion group for a bit and everybody take some time to kind of, because if you try to sort of wing it, you'll probably just stumble over your words and you'll probably feel foolish. So my suggestion is when you do question number two, stop what you're doing for a bit and everybody just take some time. I've got a pen if you need it, or you can type it into your cell phone. And then share how you would explain God to somebody who has no idea what Christian theism is even about, which is a lot of people on this campus. Okay, let's have our groups. I think we have enough for three groups. Yeah, three groups of four. No, Catholicism is not a radically different worldview. Their worldview is the same as... First of all, in this club, Catholics are Christians, okay? In this club, we're not going to put down another Christian group, all right? Careful. That's not even...